Ajñāniko has mentioned a few times that this is our Vasa period. It's called the rains retreat or rains residence. This is the rainy season in India, and that's when the monks were asked by the Buddha to spend time in one area, one place. They were traveling about quite a bit and ended up trampling a lot of crops. And so the Buddha, some complaints about that. So the Buddha said, oh, it's a good time to just settle down. So it's, even though sometimes there's some short periods of travel, it is a period where for 3 months or a little bit more than that, our community is quite stable in terms of it's just the same monastics kind of practicing with each other. And often there's a memory too of like, oh, who I spent this Vasa with or that Vasa with. And I've been recently just recollecting the importance of Sangha, the importance of practicing within a community and how very important that is. And also, you know, how important it is that we're actually informing each other, you know, as those who are following the path, we're encouraging, informing, and we've often heard this phrase over and over again, but it's still such a valuable phrase that the Buddha encouraged Ananda not to think of the Sangha as half of the holy life or just sort of a part of it. And he said it's the whole of the holy life. And whether we take that to mean, you know, did he just mean the noble Sangha? Was he talking about those awakened beings, lay and monastic, who are either stream enters or all the way up to those who are enlightened, or just practitioners, Kalyanamita? And either way, it still works. It still works to think about that, how important it is to have fellow practitioners around us, or fellow peers, those who have been practicing for a long time, and of course, most importantly, those who are our elders and who are guiding us. This two words that are added at the end of that I often add just before giving a Dhamma talk, we say Anuttarang Upajayang. And that's remembering, you know, Upajayang is the person who, your Upajay is the person who actually ordains one, lifts one in front of the Sangha and then says, you know, goes through the process and actually brings one up and says, hey, this is the person I think is worthy of being ordained, and then goes through that ordination procedure. And so that person is often thought with a lot of kindness for those of us who've gone forth, who's been willing to do that for us. But Anuttarang Upajayang also means like teachers, so those teachers. So it's saying, you know, it's sort of our keeping in mind the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, but also, you know, our living teachers, or those who we've had as actual teachers in our lives. This is coming up a bit as I just had a conversation with Lumpur Suchito, who's long been a teacher of mine and someone who I think of very highly and will ask and consult in terms of Dhamma questions I have. And in that conversation, he was talking about how we were talking about communal living and training and living in different monasteries, and he just said this very abbreviated comment, just saying, yes, the community you live in conditions you. And I thought, yeah, that's so very true. It's not something I haven't heard before, but when he said it, it gave me pause to think, that's right, it's something that can be forgotten, that those who you live with and those who you especially live with a long time, but who you're presently with, that actually changes your very experience, your very reality. And we can have an ideal that, you know, like we're practicing with others, but very much alone, and there isn't much of an influence there, but that's just not the case. And it's just a helpful thing to really think about, you know, what it is to have others that are fellow practitioners. What is it that we say when we say Kalyanamita, spiritual friendship? What does it mean when we think about that? Or versus something like worldly friendship, or when we think about having a teacher or someone who's living who we really take refuge in. So I just thought I'd talk about that a bit as a theme. And this year it's a bit poignant for me. There's been times in the last 20 years I've lived in and out of several different communities, and just a couple of times that I've been the senior monk in one of them, and that is a very different experience, but having the flavor of living with many senior monks, and especially like living in at Abhay Giri with Lumpur Pasano, Lumpur Amaro, Ajahn Kruven Damo. And then, you know, right now, just being very happy with Ajahn Yanako as our abbot. But it's been a difference with Lumpur Pasano and Ajahn Kruven Damo gone, and feeling that sense of gravitas and that sort of reliance and refuge, and how for myself it's easy to forget, but it's like, oh right, this is there's still refuge in the mind. There's still their characters, what they mean, how they act, what they've said over the years, the advice they've given is still present. And one of the things I was talking to Lumpur Suchito about was like, oh, it sometimes occurs to me, like a lot of these senior monks, they don't have a teacher around. They haven't had a teacher around for a long time. They have peers. But for many of the more elder monks in the Ajahn Chah Sangha, their Lumpur Cha is, who passed away in 1992, actually stopped teaching in 1982, so formally teaching. So yeah, it's a long time to think of a lot of these elder monks kind of practicing, and it gives me a lot of joy to know that many of us, and including myself, have had them as guides for so long and really been able to take advantage of that, and sort of, yeah, it just is a very good feeling of mudita and care, and also just knowing that they're so inspiring because of their example. So when Ananda said this to the Buddha, it really is this sort of holding up of like, you know, I said that at the end of my conversation with Lumpur Suchito, I recognized the sort of selfishness of it. I was like, thank goodness you're still alive. And, sorry, not just for me, but I, you know, and I said, and I'm so happy you're continuing on, and your, you know, your practice is well and alive, and the wisdom is just so beautiful to be able to tap into and see that, you know, the happiness that's there when speaking to elder monks. So this is something that we might kind of have a sense of like, well, I'm doing this alone and I don't need others. And, you know, the Buddha really talks about this as an individual practice, but it's far from that. It's so much a necessary part to have examples, to have those that we follow and we remember. You know, it's just in our memory, that's the sort of mindfulness that we carry with us. And we just keep it in mind. We keep the examples and the beauty of the life with us. So if you imagine like maybe coming to Abhay Giri, we think about Abhay Giri, the monastery, but it's Abhay Giri is just a bunch of buildings on a mountain, and it's quite a beautiful place. The buildings are beautiful. The mountain's beautiful, the wildlife, but that's all it is. It's not anything without the beings in it that are practicing the Dhamma. And, you know, just imagining like some strange situation where you'd come to this place, maybe like a post-apocalyptic thing, and there's just no one here. There's not really anything that would be so much of a supportive environment. I mean, maybe a bit, but not much. So it really is the, we think about it as the whole of the holy life. We think about these relationships that we have with each other, the relationships we have with elders, and how important they are, and how much they can guide us. Because when we're down and out and there's difficulty, then that's those times that we've been with our elders that have stayed in the robe so long and practiced so beautifully, we just can keep that in mind. And this can keep us going in so many ways. And at the same time, there's it's not just our relationship with elders, it's our relationship with each other, with our peers, with those of us who've been practicing for some time, and how we're relating to those who are just beginning their practice. This is just so important, and it's often something that's easily missed. I think Tanrakito reminded me of the other day, just about, we were talking about that difference between spiritual friendship and worldly friendship. So, I mean, in worldly friendship, it's like the kind of person who can make you laugh, or the kind of person who you like to be around. They make you feel good, and they're your mate, you know, rely on them in certain ways. But it's sometimes just like, it doesn't have the same flavor as a spiritual relationship. I mean, sometimes you're friends with people because they don't give you, they don't ever tell you anything that would be very critical or something that might be hurtful or kind of difficult, not hurtful in a negative way, but hurtful in a way that would challenge you. Sometimes worldly friendships aren't about challenging at all. They're just about keeping each other kind of the same. You know, sometimes it can be about not wanting someone to change, even if that change would mean something better for them. And with spiritual friendships, we're really encouraging each other along the path. But sometimes it's not even about liking. You can have a strong spiritual friendship with a person that you don't necessarily like, or you don't necessarily feel like you'd probably be friends with them if you weren't a monastic. In fact, I think there's amongst the many monks who've disrobed, they don't just hang out in some these large groups. They have that past connection of what was there, but it's this spiritual intention that we have that's binding us together, that's kind of drawing us to being together and encouraging us in that way. And so there's a sort of respect that goes on when we have spiritual friendship. There's a respect for others following the path. And we can know then that when somebody's having a tough day, you know, we see them, maybe they do something out of greed, you know, they take too much food, or we see something that we think is not so attractive. We don't, it's not just like, I hate that guy. Hopefully that's not what's coming to mind. It's more like, you see something and you either might question yourself, well, I don't know what's going on, or you might say, oh, well, maybe they see the error of what they're doing, or maybe they kind of, wake up to that a little bit more, or recognize it. And it's just like that's a changing experience of another being rather than solidifying them like, this person's just a jerk. Or if somebody's, it's very hard when we face that, when someone's, we face some aversion from someone, some anger, some bitterness, something that is said. And it's very easy to say, that he's always doing that, or I just don't like this person. But actually when we recognize like, they're suffering, when someone just acts out of greed and ignores another person or is bitter towards someone else, we can recognize their suffering, and we know that, like, if they're following the Buddhist path, then they still have the intention to be released from that. And they have the intention not to actually express aversion, not to express anger. And so spiritual friendship is recognizing that, and then sometimes actually doing something about it, where you might say something to someone if you see it happening more. You might recognize, this is a pattern. I want to help them. And so in spiritual friendship, one of the things that the Buddha talks about is not despising another for their misfortune. And we can see that's sort of a common worldly trait. It's sort of like, this person's down and out. I don't really want to be friends with them, or they did something quite wrong. I've recently been thinking about that with a particular person and what's that like to not see a person as solid and non-changing, because that's what the mind wants to do. It's always trying to, just like we're trying to form up our own identities, we're also trying to form up those of others. We're trying to create other people and make them into something that is really, really just permanent and unchanging. And so if we recognize that, if we see that in ourselves, then we have the ability to really kind of challenge ourselves and say, wait a minute, I don't know. This is anicca. We're not sure where another person is going and what's happening on their path, or even what's going on for them in a particular, day, month, year, whatever. And it's perfectly normal. That's just what our minds tend to do. And we do suffer around this. And so this is how we condition ourselves. This is how we condition others that we live with. So the Buddha's teachings are always pointing us upward, onward and upward, and trying to encourage us towards a much higher sense of wholesomeness and, how we look to others, how we care for others. And so this is, this is something that's just very easy to overlook because, we wake up and we're just not in the right mood and grumble, and we see somebody and we just don't want to look at them. It's, there's that guy again. And we forget, like, I'm actually conditioning how the whole community, in a sense, and each of us is doing that. It's not the sense that like the practice of Buddhist teachings is to just kind of like, just keep your eyes down and don't say anything to anybody and don't get involved. because you might not actually recognize somebody's really having a rough time, a difficult time, and they might need some support. And so your support of ignoring them isn't necessarily helping. So in many ways, one of the teachers, I remember a long time ago, just I've used this metaphor before, he said that the community is like a crutch, and we recognize that we're using it in a way to help us work through our dukkha, our suffering. And eventually there's a hope that won't be needed anymore, which doesn't mean that then we don't live in community or we don't help others, but we might not need that support as much, and we might be able to rely on ourselves a lot more and be someone like, if we think of like Lumbur Liam, very independent in the world, but yet extremely caring and filled with metta. So this is, just kind of thinking about how this occurs for us in our daily lives, and, you know, how important it is to recognize this when we're living with each other, and, you know, having a sense of how we can have a very good impact in our community, in our spiritual friendships, and in how that thought can actually manifest within us and then bring up a lot of wholesomeness in what it is we're doing with our own practice. You know, kind of just kind of smiling a friendly smile at someone, you know, instead of kind of shunning or not wanting to be around or something, just acknowledging another, acknowledging their own practice, you can remember that and try to keep that in mind. Because it's easy, as we were listening to a Q&A from Lumbur Pasno that was given with, I think it was some monks asking some questions. And he was really talking about, he said people can be really, something around the lines. I said, people can be really annoying, and that's just normal. We can be annoyed by people, and it's not just that it's our annoyance. It's also, you know, it's not just within us. It's that people can actually have a strong negative effect on us. But we're able to kind of use that in a wholesome way, so it doesn't bring us down, and we're able to kind of rise up to and challenge ourselves, rather than going into the sort of worldly sense of like, I don't like this person, I don't want to have to be around them. And so it's really kind of being very careful and being very caring of who we live with. And so I think the beginning of practice, this was when I, you know, was first living in community, this was quite confusing, because I remember these kind of worldly feelings of like not liking and not wanting to be around others, or these are the ones I felt I could trust and be friends with, and these are the ones I didn't. And especially when there was a feeling of criticism or something like that, it was just kind of running away from it. And just that worldliness was something that is still present within me, but it's kind of like over time, I've just gotten worn down a little bit. So it's something that we can have a lot of gratitude for when we live in community, just that sense of being with others and the assistance that we've had through either our, as I've said, our elders or our peers or just anyone that we've lived with for a long time. I remember that, it can feel quite petty in the early years when I remember just a lot of things that I felt, and they, you know, they still arise, but man, those first few years were pretty rough for me as Anagarika and Samanera and Nawaka, Bhikkhu, Junior Bhikkhu. And I remember just that it was hard to think about it any other way. And I remember something that at the time Ajahn Yatiko had said to me. He's like, well, and he was about maybe 20, you know, somewhere around 18, 19, 20 years as a monk when he said this to me. And he just said, oh, you know, after a while, you know, those feelings, they kind of get replaced by a sense of just real, like, well-wishing towards, especially towards your peers. Because in those beginning years, I remember it was the people who were closest in years that, you know, I could get quite annoyed with. You know, it's like having a sibling rivalry or something. And I thought about that a lot, because I've remembered it for a long time that he said that. And I've, you know, that sense of kind of having kindly eyes over those who I've lived with for a long time, which means it's not that I don't try to have that for everyone, but I remember not feeling that particularly for those who I was, you know, closest to and started the practice with and been around. And I'm happy that I understand what he's talking about, you know, that is very much present for me. It's sort of like, you know, another person's foibles and kind of what they're dealing with, but there's this sort of kindness that's felt. And it doesn't mean that there's never frustration or something going on, but the overwhelming feeling is more of like, oh, I'm so happy they're still going, they're still practicing the Dhamma. And, you know, for as monks, you know, still in the robes and still continuing on. So that sense of Kalyanamitta is just so important, because we're just encouraging each other. As you know, some of us kind of feel like we're bumbling along, but that very bumbling is helping us so much. So in many ways, I just wanted to talk about this a bit as an encouragement towards each other to really take in that sense of how important it is to live in community, how important it is to have our teachers close to us and around us. And then when they're not, to also, you know, keep them in mind, and to know that our, you know, our peers and those that we've spent many years with are, you know, really are true brothers and sisters in the holy life. And then, you know, this aspect of training that we talk about in the monastery, you know, it's something I forget quite a lot. But yeah, I do feel a lot of regret sometimes, because I feel like, oh yeah, I'm not such a great example. And I do see that it is incredibly important, as one is continuing to practice, that there's other members who are coming in and they're like, they're looking up and they're like, what does that look like after 20 years? And sometimes I think, well, don't look at me. But it's, you know, it's important to really, for all of us, to kind of, we're reaching out, you know, even if we've just been here 6 months, to somebody who's just arriving for the first time. But even more so, you know, when we've been around a long time, just to say, oh yeah, I do need to kind of step up and uphold a little bit more of being careful and being quite sincere around the Dhamma Vinaya, the Buddha's teachings. So these are some words of encouragement, and yeah, I just hope that we all continue to live in harmony and to have teachers close to us, and we're still continuing to live, benefit themselves, but also very much benefit us. And also just to say how nice it is to live in a harmonious community, and how helpful it is to have us kind of as much as possible looking at each other with kindly eyes, and oftentimes setting aside our differences or our stronger views and opinions or feelings of what should or shouldn't be done, and then saying, okay, you know, I can let go here. I can try to do it in a way that will cause as much harmony as I can and goodness throughout the community.